So we're going to take up this morning the story of Akavya ben Mahalalel. Familiar with him at all? The story is told in Maseches Edios, which is one of the Mishnayos. There's no Gemara on it, so it doesn't have the usual reach that a typical Mishnah has. Edios is a Masechta, records the testimonies of Tanaim in the Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. So it's a kind of just a collection of ad hoc or kind of broad range of Mesorahs, Edios, that the Chacham or Makabel.
It's often the day that they let people back into the Beis Medrash?
Could be. I'm not sure about that. I don't know, maybe. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Actually. That's a good point. In any case, this goes back to a time where, the Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, and what people knew in significant, although not total measure, is Yud Gimel Midos, but was what they heard from their Rabbeim. And this idea of Mesora is crucial to the Masechta, and it's crucial to our own Agadita. The Mishnayos rarely tell Agadatas, as you know. It's very, very compact, condensed halachas. But on rare occasions they do, and this is one example of an Agadita in Mishnayos. Akavya ben Mahalalel, who is the hero of this Agadita, so to speak, is the star. We know basically two things about him. We know what he says in Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, which I will read quickly, and then there is this Agadita about him in the Masechta, which speaks of halachic matters and his machlokas about certain halachic matters. So let's start with the teaching in Pirkei Avos. It's very famous. Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim v'ena tabali de'avera. Look deeply, reflect about three matters, and you will not come to sin. Da, me'ayin basa, know from whence you come. Ula'ana taholech, and where you will go. Ulefnei mi'ata asid liten din v'cheshbon, and before whom you will need to undergo judgment. Me'ayin basa mitipas rucha, where did you come from? A sordid drop. Ula'ana taholech, where are you going? Lumukom afar rima v'soleya, to a place of earth, worms, and maggots. That's burial. Lufnei mi ata asad li tengin v'cheshbon. Lufnei melech malchei amlacha makadosh baruch hu. So I'm not going to analyze it, but it's important to keep this teaching in the background because we're going to try to understand Akavya ben Mahalalel and why he did what he did all the way through to the end of his life. But this, I got it, this Mishnah Pirkei Avos does provide a kind of a framework for his Hashkaf Sachayim. So now let's look at the Mishnah itself. It's in Parakeh, the end of Parakeh. The Mishnah says, Akavya ben Mahalalel heyed arba'a dvarim. Akavya ben Mahalalel testified to four halachos. Amru lo, they said to him, Akavya, chazar b'cha. Chazar b'cha, recant, bi'ad ba'ad varim shahayisa omer, these four halachas that you taught, v'na'ascha av bezdin li Yisrael, and we will make you an av bezdin amongst the Jews. Well, what are the four things? Doesn't say yet. It only tells us later. That's kind of interesting, the way you might say, here are Akavya ben Mahalalel's teachings, and then they said, well, why don't you retract? And he refused to, as the story unfolds. The story starts with the four Dvarim, and immediately, without saying what they are, and immediately saying, they're offering him this prize of being the Av Bezdin if he recants. So the structure is a little unusual. You would have expected the Machlokas to come first. That one comes a little bit later. We need to think about why that might be. Now, it's also rather striking that they are offering him this prize of being Av Bezdin if he were to recant. that's a kind of an unusual or unexpected things to do. I mean, it's like bribery.
It's also like ironic because they're saying, we'll make you in charge if you don't use your power of authority.
That's an interesting point. Okay, I like that. It's an interesting point. But in any case, we need to understand, why were the Chachamim interested in sort of bribing him to recant? That's another question we need to answer. What's his response? Amar lahem, he said to them, Mutav li lihikare shota kol yamai, I'd rather be called a fool all my life in not having taken this position. V'lo le'asos shah achas rasha l'fnei ha'makom. Better than becoming a rasha before HaKadosh Baruch Hu by giving up my halachic position in order to achieve personal gain. And Shelo yiyu omrim b'shvil srara chazerbo. And people shouldn't say about me that I recanted my halachic positions in order to achieve status, in order to achieve srara. Okay, that's the background. So it kind of, the story gets off the mark really quickly without even going to the halachas. And the question I'd like to ask you is, why do you think the Chachamim felt compelled to do something that is really, in a way, shocking? Why was it so important to the Chachamim that Akavya recant? And one answer to that question is that Akavya was a towering figure. And if he didn't submit to the authority of the Chachamim, that could lead to a schism and a breakdown in the structure of halachic authority. Halachic authority depends upon everybody following the Gedolim, so to speak. In this case, following the Sanhedrin. If you have lots of different groups following lots of different leaders on matters of significance, that could lead to a total breakdown in halachic structure, authority, which is, by the way, what life is like today. You know, everybody has his own Rav, his own Rebbe, his own Rosh Hashiva. But when you had the Sanhedrin, you had complete uniformity of religious and halachic leadership. That's what the Sanhedrin did. They paskined for everybody. You couldn't dissent. If you dissented and you paskined lamaisa otherwise, what was your status? You're Zakei Mamre. Right now, apparently, Akavya ben Mahalalel never paskined otherwise. He never said, this is what you have to do. And he may well have lived after the Zman HaBayis, where all of the cases, as we'll see, that he disputes are all Bizman HaBayis, and he was probably after the Bayis, so it couldn't have been a Zakei Mamre because he didn't actually practically dissent. That's the difference. So, Chacham don't all have to agree. Nothing wrong with disagreeing. We just can't posket against the Sanhedrin. That's when the halacha of Zakei Mamre kicks in. Yeah. Well, yeah, that also was not clear whether he was a Zakei Mamre. He probably wasn't, otherwise. Yeah, exactly. In fact, I'll mention that. Let's see, he is the parallel, the other great case, in which we've learned together, if you may remember, of a Tana who dissents from authority was Rabbi Eliezer ben Azari. He was also placed in Cheron by Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverim. So these are pairs. I'll analyze as we get into it a little bit more what the differences and similarities are. But in any case, so the Chachamim were very worried about him because he was a towering figure. He could have led to a real schism, which is what sometimes happens. So they were willing to bribe him. Now, his response is, how do you interpret his response? He's saying, to do that would be to become a rasha l'fnei ha'makom. Why? Because if I am convinced that my psak is correct, then I would be debasing my commitment to halachic truth in order to achieve personal gain. It's giving up your principles. I'd be abandoning my principles in order to become a biksha. That's awful. That would be a rush of lefnei hamakom. And remember his teaching now in Pirkei Avos, which is lefnei mi ata asalitein din v'cheshbo. It's before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You just can't waver on his Torah because you can achieve high office. So that's a part of it. But he doesn't only speak about rishus. The other thing he speaks about is people shouldn't say about him that he was chozer for srara. How do you interpret that? Is he like just afraid of social opprobrium? He's like, if he was so afraid of social opprobrium and blame, then he wouldn't have dissented in the first place. So why is he so worried about what people are going to say about him? Yes.
Again, we said he's a towering figure, so maybe it would set a precedent. You know, it's not good when the role model does something.
That's a very good point, but I don't think that's what he's saying. He's saying people are going to start saying, ah, oh, he's really just looking for his own personal gain, bad reputation. But if he's worried about, you know, why is he worried about that? Like, the first argument seems to be more compelling.
Unless he's talking argument. About when he's giving the Nechashma upstairs, what they're going to say, be saying about him.
The brios means human being. It's brios. It's not the malachim. What I think the best way I understand this is that... Yishlo you Omrim. I see, you're right. Okay, I'm sorry. So Omrim might be the Malachi Asharis?
I mean, if you want to go on the context of lifting me, you know, who you're going to give the Mekeshman for, then say, well, who's he going to give the Mekeshman for? The Bezdin Shamala. And what are the Bezdin Shamala, what are they going to be saying about him? You know, he doesn't stand up when he actually feels that way. As long as, you know, he holds of an opinion until it becomes politically convenient for him to not hold that opinion.
But why would it be? I would think it might be what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, that Shelo Yehi Omer, Hashem shouldn't say that he was chozer because of his personal gain. Why introduce the Malachi Asharis? Like, you know, it seems most of the Mepharshim interpret this to mean, it's an interesting thought, but most of the Mepharshim interpret it to mean what people are going to say.
Either way, the question is of his integrity. He doesn't want people to challenge his integrity.
I think that's right. I think this is a question of personal dignity. You're a gadol b'Torah. It would be a real erosion of his dignity if people thought of him that he gives up his convictions in order to achieve personal gain. It's not only Rosh Lefnei HaMakom, it's just that he has his own set of values, and he has his own dignity. There are principles he believes in, and if people think ill of him, that is a undercuts his dignity, his sense of who
leader.
He is. Right?
He won't be an effective leader.
He also wouldn't be an effective leader. Okay. So he's very harsh in his response. He doesn't like negotiate. He's not like negotiating with the Chachamim. He's very curt and acerbic. In effect, you're making me a Russian. So you already see that this is a very tough man, right? Because he doesn't like, okay, let's talk about it. It's like, Russia. If I follow you, I'd be a Russia. That's pretty strong. Like, in effect, he's accusing them of engaging in underhanded, inappropriate behavior. That this kind of behavior, if he followed through, would lead him to be a Russian. So he is a very sharp, tough person. And we'll see that emerges even more clearly as we go down further into the mission. Okay, let's continue. So now, what are the four? Hu haya metame sa'ar ha'pakuda. These are four technical areas in halacha. The first one has to do with the sa'ar ha'pakuda. Sa'ar ha'pakuda is from the halachas of Negoyim. The halacha is that if you have a baheres, you know, kind of a nega, the skin, and the nega has a hair in it. So the halacha is that if you need both the se'ar, you need both the hair and also the nega for it to be tamei. Now, what happened was you had a baheres together with the se'ar lovan, white hair. Then the baheres disappeared. It got better. But then it returned again. Now, generally, the halacha is that if a hair precedes the baharis, then it's not tameh. First, you need the baharis, and then the hair. And that was the case when he originally had the nega. But then the baharis improved, it got healed. The se'ar lavan remained, and then the baharis returned again. So the question is, does that have the status of a Seyar preceding the Baharis? It had already been a Seyar in a Baharis. The Baharis healed, and then it returned. So the Seyar was there prior to the return of the Baharis. With it? With me? So the Machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi and Akavya ben Mahalal is what the status of that Nega is. Is it Tame? So he was Metame it. And the reason he was Metame it, even though, in effect, the Seyar preceded the second Baharis, the Ravid explains on the side of the Mishnah, the Ravid explains that Akavya believed that it never really fully healed. And therefore, it doesn't have the status of a Seyar preceding the Baharis, even though it did precede the second recurrence of the Baharis. The fact that it recurs demonstrates that it never really healed. So it really goes back to the original Nega, and therefore it's Tamei. Okay? The next case is Dam HaYorok. It's not so important that you know these things, but once we're learning the Mishnah, we might as well get it straight. I mean, it's not so important for the Agadita, but we might as well get the Halachas. Dam HaYorok. This is Dam Nida. Now, any Dam Nida is supposed to be technically red, otherwise it's not Nida. Let's say you have yellow stain, which is not red. What is the halachic status of that? So he was metame, and the chachamim were metarim, which is, of course, the way we paskin nowadays. If a kesem is yellow, then it's not tame. And that's following the psak of the chachamim. According to Akavya, there would be much more separation between men and husbands and wives than the way we pass it according to the Chacham, because the Dam Yorok is pretty common. In any case, that's the second machlokas. Third machlokas is Hu Haya Matir Sa'ar Bechor Balmum Shenashar Vihinicho Bechalon B'yachar Kach Shchato Chachamim Osrim. So here, this is a technical halacha in the halachas of Bechor. Bechor has to be brought to a kohen, as you know. Whether it's a if it's a, not a balmum, it's shechted, it's brought as a carbon. If it's a balmum, then it's eaten by the kohen. It has to be eaten. Has to be eaten within a year, or brought as a carbon within a year. Now, for that reason, the Chachamim said you can't shear the Bechor, the animal, or use its any of its skin, because they were before the shechita or before the eating it, or before the carbon, because they were afraid that you would be tempted to delay past the year to wait for a good growth of hair. So therefore they said, you can't use it. Now, what happens if the hair came off by itself? You didn't cut it, it just fell off. Hair sometimes, you know, tufts of hair fall off. And he wanted to save it, so he put it in the chalon, and he saved it until the year was over. And then he shechted the animal, or brought it as a carbon. So the machlokas is whether that shechita, or bringing it to carbon, is mater, the hair that had to wait until a year. It came off by itself, he didn't take it off. So the question is whether the gezeiras chachamim applied to hair that fell off by itself rather than was intentionally cut off. Are they gozer? Oh, if you leave and use it, well, maybe you'll cut it off yourself independently, because, you know, oh, the hair's okay, or not. That's the machlokas. You with me? It's the machlokas in the Chachamim and Akavya ben Mahalalel. Okay, four machlokas. And that's the third one. The fourth one is a very important one. Hu haya omer, ein mashkin lo es agiyoris v'lo es shivcha hamashuchreris. The Chachamim mashkin. This has to do with the halachas of Sota, Mei Sota, and the machlokas between the Chachamim and Akavya ben Mahalalel is whether you give Mei Sota to a giyores, or to a shifra hamashuchreres, who was freed. Does the halacha of Sota apply only to somebody who was born a Jew? Gioris is not, shifra hamashuchreres is not, or, and it's based on diukim and the psukim, which don't need to concern us, but their shahs had to learn up the psukim. So the chachamim say you do, and Akavya said you don't. Amrulo. So now we have a halachic dialogue between Akavya and the Chachamim. We'll prove to you that we're right, and that our Mesorah is correct. On what basis? This is tricky. Think about it. How can you prove one Mesorah is correct over the other? When you have a Machlokas in Svara, you could argue the Svaras. But here it's a Machlokas as to who was, as we'll see later in the Mishnah, who was Makabel from the Rove. It's not like Akavi is debating the halachic logic of the Chachamim and vice versa. It's Akavi said, I was Makabel, these four halachas from the majority of the Sanhedrin. The Chachamim say, no. We were Makabel, our halachas from the majority of the Sanhedrin. See, it's just who got the Eidus right? Who got it from the majority? There's no room for argument here, in a way, right? A halachic argument. Like, you look at a Gemara, a Mishnah, you know, yeah, Svar this, Akasha here, Akasha there. There's no room for that. It's just this is a kind of a debate over a matter of fact, who had the robe, as we'll see. So the best proof they could bring would be a Maisa to show that the leaders of a previous Sanhedrin took a particular position. Then that must be the correct position. So that's why they try to prove it from a Maisa. And the Maisa is with Shemaya v'Avtalion. And the Mishnah reads, Maisa b'Karkimis Shifcha Mishukhreris. The story about Karkimis, whose name was the name of a Shifra Mishukhreris. Shehaisa b'Yerushalayim v'Hishkua Shemaya v'Avtalion. Shemaya v'Avtalion were the early Zugim. They were the leaders of the Sanhedrin, or the head of the Sanhedrin, the Av Bezdin. And they would Paskin, you know, as leader of the Sanhedrin. And in that particular case, they actually Paskin that, and they did, in fact, give her Mesota. So, knock down proof that our Mesora is correct and your Mesora is wrong. So he responds with two words, an astonishing response. Amar Lehem, Dugma Hishkua. So, not clear what that means, and there are two standard explanations, partially maybe dependent upon the Girsa in the Mishnah, but derive it if you look on the bottom right. It's underlined, I think, in your text. Isn't it underlined? So the Ravid brings down two interpretations. You see it? The Rambam also has a parish, but let's look at the Ravid. It's a little clearer. Dugma Hishkua, Klomer Dugma did who? Degem is like a model. This is like them. Mipnei Shehem Hayu Gerim. They were Gerim, according to the Mesorah, Shmai and Avtalya. Avtalya, by the way, is not exactly a very Jewish name. It's a Greek name, Avtalya. Ratsu, because they were Gerim, Ratsu lahachzik esagiyores b'chol dine Yisrael. They had a vested interest in regularizing the status of a Ger. They were Ger. So they didn't want to say, oh, a Giores, no, Mesota, that's to marginalize Gerim from the halachas that govern society. And he's saying, they just did it out of personal interest. Isn't that a shocking thing to say? Imagine if those kinds of arguments were widespread. I mean, you would undercut halachic authority. Oh, it was, you know, he had personal interest in doing this. Shemayim Avtalion were the heads of the Sanhedrin. To say that they paskin because of their own personal negias would be devastating. And he is accusing them of this bias. By the way, this reminds me of the case with Trump. During the campaign, remember Lahavdil, maybe not Lahavdil, whatever, but remember he criticized a judge who was Spanish in origin as being disqualified to judge, to opine on the issue of Mexico because he was Hispanic and therefore he was, and everybody said, you know, you can't do that. The guy's an American. You can't say because he has roots as he's Hispanic, therefore he can't make decisions about matters related or can't opine on the question of Mexico. I mean, what everybody was criticizing Trump for was that kind of argument undercuts the whole
authority. Don't we hold that on
the Yes, but he's not saying just Dom Nogayavadover. It's just that because you're Gary, they couldn't paskin any shilas about Gerim. He's saying that they're not. What he's saying is they lack halachic integrity. They were Nogaya. They lack halachic integrity. To say that about, you know, it's like a. It's an unthinkable thing to say about Ramosha Feinstein that he paskin shilas because the guy lived in Lower East Side and he liked Lower East Side, so he was Mekel. I mean, like, what does that mean? It's a terrible claim. And it was so unacceptable that he was put into nidui, as he was put into cheirim. That's the first interpretation. The second interpretation isn't quite as shocking. Yesh befarshim, although still disturbing. Shelo kosvula megilas sota umachula. They didn't write a real legitimate megilas sota. Elaba amu kosvula was like an ersatz, fake megilas sota. Exactly, yes, a model. That's dega, model. It was, they made believe that it was me sota. It wasn't really me sota. But how can you tell? You have water, you know, you have water in a jug. You know if it's me sota or not. So they made believe it was me sota, and their goal was to so frighten her that she would admit the truth as to whether or not she committed adultery. What's that? Yeah, yeah, like kind of like a placebo, right? Now that's also disturbing because what he's saying is that they also kind of created an inauthentic halachic artifact. It's like making believe that this is Mesota. Like it's a bizui for Mesota. And also, if it doesn't work, people are going to say, oh, it doesn't work, and she was an adulterer. They could cast out on the whole institution of Sota. And also, it undercuts their... It's lacking in integrity. A gadol is a person of integrity. You can rely that what he's doing is true. And he's arguing that it wasn't true. The whole thing was made up. It wasn't Mesota. So in both cases, although the first Peirush in the Ravid is the more, I would say, shocking one, but both cases he evinced lack of respect for the integrity of Shmaya and Atalia. So, v'niduhu, put him in chair, umeis v'niduya, and he died in nidui, and this is parallel, as I mentioned, to the case of Rabbi Eliezer, who also, on his deathbed, his whole question about how to interpret the deathbed, you remember, may remember we learned that in depth, but the pshat is that he died in Nidui, Rabbi Eliezer, and Akavi ben Mahalalel also, according to this Misora in the Mishnah, died ben Nidui, which is a horrible fate. Remember, the Chachamim live to talk and learning with other Chachamim, and to teach. If you're in Nidui, you can't talk and learning with other Chachamim, and you can't, nobody's going to listen. You can't have Talmidim. So it's the worst possible fate for a Talmud Chacham, a Rosh Hashiva, not to have Talmidim, not to have anybody to talk to and learn. So it's a really quite a terrible fate. Not only that, V'saklu Bezdin es Arono, and Bezdin stoned his Aron. Vehement attack by the Chachamim on Akavya. So why? Again, why? Soklin is Arono. Why Skila? He's saying is about these Chayiv Misa. It's kind of a kind of Chayiv Misa. Because it's kind of like a Zakei Mamre. It wasn't literally Zakei Mamre, but it was kind of like a Zakei Mamre. And the reason a Zakei Mamre is such a horrible thing is, again, and where you really have a Zakei Mamre, it breaks and fractures the authority of the Sanhedrin, which means that there is no ultimate halachic authority. And that's very bad. However, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is very important to understand this. Chas v'shalom shakavya disnada. Chas v'shalom that Akavya was placed in Nidui. She'ein ha'azara nin eles b'fnei kol adam miYisrael b'chachma u'b'yir aschet ka'akavya ben Mahalalel. Rabbi Yehuda is reflecting the respect, the awe, that Akavya was held in by his peers. She'ein ha'azara nin eles. When Erev Pesach, when people go in to shech their carbon, into the azara, you had a mob scene. And they had to just close the doors because it was a total mob. You had large, massive numbers of Jews in there shechting their, you know, Karim Pesach. And nobody in that massive collection of people has the same Yiras Chet, the same Chachma as Akavya ben Mahalalel. There's no way that somebody that great could be a place in the Knesset. In other words, he couldn't accept this. Now this is obviously post facto, generations later. This wasn't contemporary. If it was contemporary, we would know. But generations later, there was already came to be ambiguity about what happened. Just like this is, in a way, an ironic reflection of the whole machlokas. What's the machlokas about? What's the mesora? Generations later, the mesora becomes lacking in clarity. That challenge is recapitulated in the very understanding of who Akavia was. Generations later, we can't figure out Akavia. Do you see that? It's a kind of a recapitulation of the core shaila in halacha, where you have a problem with the Masorah. And they could not accept the fact that somebody as great as he, Rabbi Yehuda, was placed in it. It just couldn't happen. Chachma and Yiras Chet. So it's two things, Chachma and Yiras Chet. And the Yiras Chet is reflected in that in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Where are you coming from? You're nothing. Tipa Shrucha. Where are you going? Nowhere. You're going to Rima Vesoleya. All that matters is your authentic, true stance before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the deepest Yiras Chet. And that's not Yiras Onesh. What's the difference between Yiras Chet and Yiras Onesh? Yiras Onesh is that somebody is afraid about the punishment he'll get from a Chet. Yiras Chet is the Chet itself is so awful that you were afraid of the Chet. Not the Onesh for the Chet. Akavia was so rigorous in his total focus on standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and giving Divrei Cheshbon that he would never in the slightest way do anything wrong. I mean, he's always standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, this is what Akavia had in mind every moment of his life. You're a nobody physically, and all that matters is your stance before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Shivisi Hashem Negdi Tami that he had with him all the time. So how could he ever sin? That's why he was such a great tzaddik, because he was always thinking with Nehemiah to us and did the Cheshbon. So no way that Akavia could not have been placed in Nidui. So what happened? That's me Nidui. There was a tradition that some great gadol was placed in Nidui. Eliezer ben Chanoch, ironically another Rabbi Eliezer, but not Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Chanoch, shepikpek betar ras yadayim. He questioned taras yadayim. The halacha, as you know, is that originally only a whole person's guf could become tameh. It's not like your nose could become tameh and your leg couldn't. If you were tameh, your whole body was tameh. The chacham were misaken that hands, because they're mishmashbashim, have a separate status of tumah and they can become tameh, and that's why we do netilas yadayim. That's the chiddush of the Chachamim, that you can segregate a part of the body and say that that could become tameh and not the rest of you. Because logically, if your hands are tameh, then you should go to the mikvah. Why isn't Tilas Yadayim sufficient? So the Chachamim made a huge chiddush, really quite a chiddush in Hilchos Tumah Vetaira, that you can separate your hands out from the rest of your body, and not the rest of your body doesn't become tameh, only your hands do, and your hands can become tar separately. That's the chiddush on Tilas Yadayim. It's a very good chiddush. You think about the halachas of Tumah Vetaira. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Chanoch rejected it, or he questioned it. Ukeshamei sholchu bezdin v'hinicho evan al arono. And when he died, they bezdin sent a messenger and put a stone on his aron. Malamech kolam misnadu meis b'niduyav hayusoklu nes arono. So it teaches you halacha. The Mishnah is always teaching halachas. You see from this maisa that if somebody's placed in nidui, soklu nes arono. Okay. So the Mishnah, as it comes down to us, lacks certainty about the true status of Akavia ben Malon. So interesting. He was just too great to fall into this. They couldn't accept him. Rabbi Yehuda could not accept it. It's fascinating. Okay, now we come. Time elapses. We don't know how much time. It's not clear, but probably a while. And we are now at his deathbed. Like Rabbi Eliezer. Remember, we encountered Rabbi Eliezer at his deathbed, so now we encounter another person placed, another great Tana, the two great Tanayim placed in Nidui, in Chayram, at their deathbed. B'shas misaso amar libno. At his death, he said to his son, B'ni, my son, chazar b'cha b'dala dvarim shahisi omer. Retract and don't follow my psak. Whoa. Akavia sacrificed his whole life on the altar of his intellectual integrity and commitment to the emes of halacha. And his parting advice to his son is, don't follow me? What's the reason for it? Amale, v'lama lo chazarta b'cha? Why didn't you retract? If you're telling us to retract, then you should retract. What is this, a double standard? So he answers, it's a very interesting answer, very important answer. Amalo, he said to him, his son, Ani shamati mipi harubim, v'heim shamu mipi harubim. I am certain that I got my psak from the majority of the Sanhedrin. I know that. They also are certain that they got their Masur and Halacha also from the majority. Ami ani amadati b'shmuasi v'heim amdu b'shmuasan. Because I am certain I got it from the Rove, Achirab Lahatos, I have to follow the Rove. They are certain they got it from the Rove. They heard it themselves. I heard it myself. So there's no debate or discussion. They heard it from the Rove. I heard it from the Rove. We're both obligated to adhere to what we heard from the Rove. Avalata. But you, Shamati mipi yachid. You heard it from me. Am I a Rabbim? No. I'm a yachid. And you also heard me, Pi Amarubim. I am a Yachid Cholik on the majority, on the Rabbim. Mutav lahaniach divrei ha-yachid v'lechos b'divrei ha-marubim. Abandon me. This is a fascinating and brilliant point. It's brilliant because what he is now doing for the first time is distinguishing between halachic truth and halachic process. I, because I heard it from a rabbin, am convinced that I must abide by that psak. But sometimes halachic process overrides halachic truth. Because the process of halacha is we are always obligated to follow the Rove. I'm following the Rove, they're following the Rove. Now you are the next generation over. What's your obligation? To follow the Rove. And the Rove is not like me. So you're obligated to abandon the psak for which I sacrificed my whole life. That's a fascinating shift and claim. And it's, to me, it's tragic. Here he sacrifices his whole life to his... Right? He gave up everything. Placed in Nidui. That's the worst possible fate for a Talmud Chacham or anybody. A Talmud Chacham. And now he tells his sons not to follow him. Which is to say, if you think about it, that means that the Das Yachid will always collapse. It will never endure into the future. Because wherever you have the system of following the majority, even if the Yachid is convinced he's right, it will never endure to the next generation. Because for the next generation, it's always Yachid and Rav. Process, the process of the modes of Psak are such as to where you have a functioning system, we don't have today, but where you have a functioning system, the majority would always crush for the next generation the minority. Because the subsequent generation has to face with the majority of the minority. Even if the minority was sure, the children of Rabbi Eliezer would have had on this argument to have followed the Chacham, even though Shemayim said that Rabbi Eliezer is right. But you have to follow. Now, this is different than the case of Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer, there the machlokas was about Rabbi Eliezer's not majority issue, but he had a Kabbalah, Rebbe, Mipi Rebbe, Mipi Rebbe, Mipi Rebbe, going to back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was right about Tana Rav Achnai. And the Chachamim just said, you're wrong, on the basis of their reason, even though the Shemayim said he was right. So it wasn't an issue of process for him. It was a pure issue of truth. He had the Masorah back to Moshe Rabbeinu versus the autonomy of the Chachamim to make a decision. Whereas in the case of Akavya, it's all about process leading to truth. Akavya had a majority. So he was convinced that his halacha was correct because of the majority. Not because he had a Masorah going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? That was a Rabbi Eliezer. He was convinced he was right because he heard it from the majority of the Sanhedrin. So here you have halachic truth interwoven into process, not separate from process, as is the case with Rabbi Eliezer. You with me? You see the difference? But at the end of the day, what emerges from the case of Rabbi Eliezer and the case of Akavia is that Rabbim must always be followed at sacrifice of the truth of your Mesorah all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Eliezer, or at sacrifice to your understanding of what the Rabbim said to. Now notice, I think, a shift in Akavia. He says the word b'ni, which is a term of endearment. He's not as, doesn't emerge as crusty as he did earlier. Now he's talking to his son. But he's also talking to his son at the end of his life. And he wants to teach him a musr, haskia. So he speaks to him in b'ni, my son. Mutav. Why does he say mutav? Why does he say chayev? Why doesn't he say chayev? That's halacha, right? It's halacha. Why does it say muta? That question, good question. Here's what I think the answer might be: that he's teaching him a lesson in life that he himself, Akavia, was at pains to learn. Because he's telling his son, follow the majority. And Akavia was very rigid in not following the contemporary majority. And he's saying, he is affirming the value of halachic society, of chaveira, of pilpul chaveira. Mutav. It's a good thing to follow, be a part of the majority. In other words, I hear him not only, if it were just a psak for his son, he would paska. If he's saying mutav, I hear there's an element of personal regret, or pain, maybe better yet, in the way he conducted his life. You know, mutav, there's something to be said. It's good to be a part of a chevra, to be a part of the yeshiva, not sit off by yourself, and nidoy mutav. There's something good about that. Maybe I was too rigid and too tough in my quest for halachic truth. Mutav, you know, it's good. It's good to have chaverim. You're in Beis Medrash and Lander. You know, you don't want to be off to the side, even if you're sure you're right, sitting in the shtender and doing a thing. He doesn't recant his position, right? So he remains obedient to the truth. But I hear an emotional expression of the cost of that, and the goodness, the blessing of being a part of a chevra. Yes?
No, I was just going to say that he himself says, I had to follow the position that I followed. He wasn't regretting...
That's correct. But he's expressing the pain and the loss that comes from being a part of a...
Is he telling his son that in a similar position, if you think you have the robe...
No, I think he would tell his son to do what he did, but he is coming around to the... you know, the first picture of him is I would call him an arch, crusty litvak. You know, hey, standing before a Kaddish Baruch Hu, let's get it right, no shtick, you know, let's just... Halacha, this is my Mesorah, I don't care... You know, litvaks, they can be tough and sharp and acerbic. You know, let's no shtick. You ever met some real litvaks? We can be really, really, you know, nowadays that's maybe a little lost in the loving yeshiva world of contemporary life where everybody has to hug you and kiss you and love you. But, I mean, I, you know, had rabbeim who were real litvaks who were from Lithuania, you know, when I was in yeshiva. And these were European rabbeim. And they were wonderful rabbeim. Some of them were just fantastic. But, you know, get it clear. This is not a matter of a game. This is a Kaddish Baruch Hu's Torah. You need to get it clear. And they can be very sharp and very critical. And if you hear a Litvak debate, you know, they're very critical. If you hear a Litvish or Rosh Yeshiva's debate. So, you know, there's something about him that's very admirable. But as he aged, right before his deathbed, I sense with the mutav and the b'ni, a kind of a softening. Not a recanting. He keeps his position, but a softening. Human softening. And look how it continues. Fascinating. Amar lo, Abba, pekod alai chavercha. Say a few good words about me amongst your chaverim. You know, if you were placed in Nidoy, what happened to a son? He's also ostracized. I mean, not technically, he's not Nidui, but, you know, it's not exactly the most respected family in the community. Dad is in Cherem. What happens to son? You know, say a few words to me so that after your death I can reintegrate into society and be a part of the Chevra, learn in the Beis Medrash, you know, state my point of view, and be a Talmud Chacham with my other Chaverim. Amalo, the Litvak is still there. Any mafke, I will not. Any mafke, I will not say one good word about you. Well, that's pretty tough. Amrlo, Shema Ila Matza Speed. Did I do something wrong? Did you find some fault with me? Amrlo, Lav, you're great. But Ma'asecha Yekarvucha or Ma'asecha Yerachakucha. Your place in life is shaped by who you are and what you do. There is nothing I can do for you. If you deserve to, if you are to be a respected member of the Chevra, that must be because you deserve it. Not because you got a letter of recommendation from Dad. Not because you use Protexia. This is the Litvak. It's who you are. You may be in an ideal Litvish world. You may be the son of a Rosh Yeshiva, but you're not taking over unless you're really a big Talmud Chacham. Doesn't always work that way. But in an ideal world, it does work that way. In other words, you succeed on your own merits. It's not because you have a protection, not because you have family connections. Ma'asecha. That's dalef nei miata omed. This is, Akavia was totally focused on authenticity and intellectual integrity. And it's who you are that makes you what you are. That's a part of the deepest message that he gives to his son, that nobody can speak for you. You can only make your way in the world. Every mommy and daddy and Rosh Yeshiva and Rebbe, ultimately that's a profoundly important message for a child. You may be raised with a silver spoon, you may have lots of education, we may give you the best of things, but at the end of the day, you need to make your way in the world. And that's the message he gives his sons. But and that's consistent with his overall persona, his overall teaching in Pirkei Avos. But I hear, you can agree or disagree, but I personally hear in this an echo about himself. Ma'asai, I made my own fate. Just like I am telling you that your life is shaped by your choices, I am reflecting, Akavi is now saying about himself on his deathbed, he is reflecting about the choices he made in life and the ma'asim that he made, which were merachek him. And at the end of the day, at the very, very end of his life, he is taking responsibility for the choices he made. Not directly, he's talking to his son, but subtly and indirectly, because the message is the same. What I did with my life shaped, he's saying, his death in Nidui. And he was, look how harsh he was about Shmaya Naftalia. The great Gedolim. His Maisim, his harshness about Shmaya Naftalia, his disrespect, which was emerged from his almost obsessive quest for the truth, that total compulsion to achieve the truth, which is a great thing, spins off in negative ways, which are disrespectful to great Gedolim. Ma'asai, my words, that my quest for truth bled off into a disrespect for Chachamim and a disrespect in some way for the process of Rov and Yachid. And while he is still committed to the truth, he never recants. Impressive. Never changes his mind. Still committed to the truth. He recognizes and takes responsibility for the implications of that compulsion. Wonderful to achieve the truth, for his interaction with other people, for the harshness with which he spoke about a Shmaya Naftalia, for the harshness with which he responded to that offer of the Chachamim. He was really a curmudgeon. Very, very tough. And he is now at the end of his life taking responsibility for the choices he made. As he advises his son, he takes responsibility for his life. And Mace Beniduya, according to the original Mishnah in Mount Deir Yehuda, and the way this Mishnah unfolds, he dies eternally committed to the truth, but fully recognizing the cost of that commitment and the way in which he related to other people.